Animal Fire Podcast. That was Ian McNeely on the guitar playing a musical equivalent of the Chinese telephone game where he heard our normal intro music and then tried to play it, and that's what happened. It was pretty cool. Way to go, Ian.
Thank you. Thank you.
In case you're wondering why we have to have Ian playing Chinese telephone with the guitar, it's because we're on location today. It's a location podcast at my dad's house, building the set in his shop. And that's going to segue right into what we want to talk about, which is what does it take to prepare a show on our 1 week until Hamlet opens? Pre-anniversary.
The pre-1 week anniversary. If that's a thing, it is now, and we're ready to explore the issues of what does it take to open up your own Shakespeare in the Park.
Wait, wouldn't we be 2 weeks away from the anniversary of when we opened if we're a week away from opening?
It's a logic puzzle, and if any of our answers, if any of our listeners out there know the answer, they should win a prize if they can leave it in the comments.
Yeah, if any listener out there can muddle through my gibberish, they should win a prize. This is going to be a fun podcast. We're on location. We're actually taking a break from carpentry. We were building the set, and this is our lunch break, and we're sacrificing our lunch break
to do a podcast.
To do a podcast about what we just did. This is our modern era in reflection.
We'll have to throw some pictures up, because we did a whole bunch of cool stuff today. We made a casket for Ophelia's death.
Yes.
We made, or actually, Austin's dad made some cool swords, some cool daggers for the Rape Your Dagger fight in the end.
The casket was amazingly simple. It's just two PVC pipes with connected together with a cloth over them, and suddenly it looks like a casket. I was amazed it worked out. I had an idea, and it worked.
Austin kept talking about it at rehearsals, and people would say, well, then we carry in the casket? What does the casket look like? And Austin very cleverly had this idea to just drape cloth over PVC, and everybody was very skeptical. So today at rehearsal, he'll have a big win on his hands when he can show his incredibly cool casket we've made.
I'm going to walk in like the hero of an 80s teen movie and impress all the cool kids.
That's awesome. That sounds like every rehearsal, Austin.
Let's move on, because I don't really know what that means. So what does it take to put together a show? I mean, if you've ever come and seen one of Animal Fire Theater's shows in the park, or maybe you've ever seen any show in the park, I think you would be amazed at the amount of work that goes into building all of this stuff and all the level of detail you have to think about when doing this, because it's all-encompassing.
That was the sound of a text message, which is also from Star Trek. Oh.
Very professional.
I know. I should have remembered to turn off my cell phone when I entered into the studio of Austin's parents' living room.
But, and if you've done a show, you know the level of detail you can put into it. Really, it's almost an infinite hole, right? You can go as deep as you want to.
Yeah, but with only a couple people doing all the work, we go as far as we can.
Mm-hmm.
But it's huge requirements. The props, the costumes, and the set, right? Those would be the three big parts. There's no lights. We do it live in the park, so our light is the sun.
No sound.
No sound. Yeah, we tried that once, though. We did it in Macbeth.
We did. We did sound. You don't need it in the park. You play artificial music in that park, and it sounds artificial
compared to
kind of how realistic everything else is.
That's something I'd love to talk about, Austin, is the style of production that's appropriate for a park. Because it seems like certain things that would read really well in a traditional theater space, like a black box or a proscenium, certain things that would look good there look kind of dumb when you're in nature, and other things pop better. What do you think your aesthetic is?
It's weird. We ran into this in a big way when we did Midsummer Night's Dream last year, because, you know, Midsummer Night's Dream is set in a forest. So if you're doing it in a forest, what is your set? You know, how do you have things be foresty in a forest? Because the you think that would be simple, but it's not, because anything somebody wears has to look right in a real forest. You can't have anything that looks even remotely artificial, because these real-life trees are going to call your bluff.
Oh, interesting. So anything that looks remotely natural has to be increased, has to have increased reality to it.
Right.
More
like,
real.
If you want to have the magic flower from A Midsummer Night's Dream, you've got to have something that looks like it could be growing three trees away from you, because you've got flowers all around you and you've got forest all around you. But on the other hand, you don't want to just rip off a flower from a tree, because they wilt and they're difficult to deal with and they're much more fragile.
It's not a real prop.
It's not a real prop.
Real flower.
Yeah, you know. And so it was a weird, interesting thing coming up with what you can do in Midsummer, and kind of having to put a whole tradition of Midsummer's behind us in terms of, you know, fantastical flowers and fairies covered in vines and fake moss and things, and figure out what our aesthetic in the forest was going to be and what kind of magic would match the woods around us.
Instead of fake vines and
fake
foliage, which would read as cheesy.
Yeah, it was really fun. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, it drove me actually more towards Scandinavian and Norse mythology and their kind of fairy lore in terms of design cues for the fairies, because they have a similar kind of nature to what we have in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yeah. Well, for those of you at home that have never seen Priest Point Park, my verbal description will not do it justice, but it's a big, beautiful field we perform in that's surrounded by a luscious forest of
tall evergreen trees.
Tall evergreen trees. It's beautiful, beautiful. And there's moss and bushes and squirrels, and it's beautiful.
Actually, just last Monday night, at the very top of To Be or Not To Be, a raccoon waddled out onto a log, watched Jay Hamlet perform the entire monologue, and the raccoon looked like he was really into it.
Really?
He was, like, rapt. So maybe he was trying to, I don't know, like, he was going through some hard stuff in life or something.
He was kind of thinking about ending it?
Yeah.
And Jay's speech.
So this suicidal raccoon walks out and watches the entire monologue, and then kind of bumbles back in. And he popped out a bit later, too, and everyone in the cast was enchanted because he's adorable. But it's kind of fun. I really like being outdoors. There's kind of something special about it.
Have you seen other animals out there? I know that there were a huge flock of birds that came through once during a Macbeth rehearsal. And it was really creepy because they were like crows, I think.
Yeah, and there's that line in Macbeth, you know, the raven is hoarse, and we've had ravens cawing during that.
We're not that far away from the water. The what do you call it? Is it an inlet? It's an offshoot of the Puget Sound.
Yeah, it is the Puget Sound, yeah, the Olympia Sound.
It's not that far away. It's just above a hill, so every now and then you see seagulls fly by and you can hear the
It's actually a beautiful sounds. Spot kind of behind it that the actors go to warm up in. You have a view of the bay. Really probably one of the best places you could ever hope to warm up.
Oh, yeah.
On a nice summer day.
Oh, yeah, it's surreal. We do yoga and right before the show and look at the water. It's very, very nice.
I feel like we should be charging to have people experience doing the show instead of, you know, having them come see the show.
We're a theater that charges people to partake in producing, not in enjoying the
How much
product.
Would you pay to do yoga by the bay? How much would you pay to do monologues for suicidal raccoons?
It's like theater camp
Think
for adults.
It. Yeah, yeah. I worked for years at a summer camp, and this reminds me so much of summer camp. It really is like a bunch of people volunteering to have a summer camp experience about theater.
We all lived together the first year when we did Macbeth.
Oh, God.
And that is very summer campy. Like, we're in the dorms.
Yeah, we the first year we came over, which was 2010, summer 2010, when we did Macbeth, we put six of us in a three-bedroom apartment. Sorry, Black Lake Apartments, I lied to you on the form.
Yeah. Ian McNeely and Austin Anderson were the two residents listed at the Black Lake Apartments.
Yes. Apartment G12, wasn't it?
So for all of you devotees to our podcast, you can go out there and actually find the apartment building that we crammed six people into.
But yeah, and so there was two people per bedroom, and there was a ferret involved eventually.
I owned a ferret then, yes.
It was really wild. It was very, very stressful. I would not recommend it. I would not do it again.
Can I just say to all of our listeners out there, the name of my ferret was Rosalind Rosencrantz McNeely. That's from two different Shakespeare plays.
And
McNeely, which is not from a Shakespeare play.
Wow, we derailed into a little history of animal fire theater.
We have, but fun. We've come full circle because ferrets live in parks sometimes in nature.
Your ferret may still live in a park.
May still, because she...
She escaped.
She escaped. This turned sad. I'm still sad about that. Anyway, so we're building Hamlet now. Now we've moved back to the present, and it's good. It's good to be back in nature.
It is good to be that back in nature, but let's take a little break right now, Ian, because I think it's time to play Name That Play.
Name That Play.
Name That Play.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oh, this is gonna be a fun one.
So, all right, I'm ready.
Ian, why don't you explain the game to them if they don't know?
Name That Play is an exciting, fast-paced game where Austin Anderson reads a quote, and I have to say which Shakespeare play it's from. And for bonus points, I have to say the character. And I'm so far, I think I'm like 0 for 10. So if I could get just anything, maybe even half the title, it'd be a big win for me. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go, Austin. I'm ready. Lay the quote on me.
I do beseech you, send for the lady to the Sagittary, and let her speak of me before her father. If you do find me foul in her report, the trust, the office I do hold of you, not only take away, but let your sentence even fall upon my life.
So there's a lady with a father, and they're going to the Sagittary. Wow. Maybe like, one of those plays with a girl and a father. That's like everyone. Okay, I'm gonna say, one from the very end.
I'll give you a hint. The more important part is the let your sentence even fall upon my life. So think about a female character in Shakespeare who could condemn or save a male character. Why would a male character need a female character to speak on his behalf?
Thinking of Measure for Measure, or maybe All's Well with the king.
I'm going to say this, and you're going to be mad.
Okay.
Are you ready for it?
Yeah, sure.
It's from Othello.
Oh.
And it's Othello asking them to go get Desdemona.
This is a hard name.
In 1-3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that, so that's another failure for me.
Sorry,
Ian. Guess the quote.
Oh.
Someday. When you do Romeo, Romeo, Wherefore Art Thou Romeo, I can do that one.
All right, Ian, your next quote is to be or not to be.
I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. I have to ask my friend who's a raccoon. He'll know.
Yeah, right now there's a raccoon out there who's holding a little squirrel skull, and all the woodland animals are around him. That's adorable. This should be a Disney cartoon.
Yeah, where the Disney
animals... The
raccoon
who wanted to be an actor, he went to Peopletown.
Oh, my God.
And he saw Hamlet. And then he came back, and all the animals are like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm acting. This is the thing. And
it's like Nightmare Before Christmas, but for theater fans.
Yeah, exactly.
This sounds really good, actually. Yeah, so nobody steal this idea while we write the screenplay.
Just imagine after the end of my words is that little copyright C with the circle. That's me. I copyrighted that.
What's the name of the raccoon, Austin, in the show?
Raccoon Stance?
Rackenstance? Great name. Rackenstance. Rackenstance, the raccoon.
And his best friend, Gildan Crow.
Wow. Yeah, this sounds great. This is going to be a really, really moving experience for everyone that watches this movie. So what else? Now, Austin, now that we're getting close to opening, what do you think are the biggest pieces of the puzzle that we have to put in play to have a great show in the park?
Shoes.
Shoes?
Shoes. That's the hardest thing to do these shows every year, is to come up with 11, 12 pairs of shoes that you can destroy, because we really do ruin shoes in this park. They just get beat up. It's, you run around the dirt for 3 weekends.
How would you describe the aesthetic of Hamlet? What kind of clothes, including their shoes, will they be wearing?
It's very, very modern. It always feels like a modern play to me, and I think a lot of people have found that as well. So it's modern. I'm always a little bit fantastical in my approach to things. In my mind, Shakespeare's are always fantasies, and so I always add fantastical things to it. But it's pretty modern. This is probably the most modern Shakespeare. So you can see people in t-shirts and jeans, but maybe t-shirts, jeans, and a crown. It's going to be very very modern, very simple. We're going to just kind of get out of the way of the story and let that kind of do its work.
And it'll be doing its work in shoes.
Doing its work in shoes, exactly.
Great. Great. Well, that's exciting. If shoes are our biggest problem, I think we're probably in good shape.
It's one of those things you don't think about when you go to do these shows. That, you know, oh yeah, we need costumes. Look at some shirts and a scarf or something or whatever. And then, you know, you need shoes and you need pants. And does anyone need a belt? And do they need gloves? And it's this weird escalation thing. If you've ever done a show that you have to costume, there's a ton of work into it. It's surprisingly complex, you know. Even if your budget is such that the way you get your costumes is you load everybody up in the van and head down to the Value Village, which is what Animal Fire Theater does.
Ah, the magic is ruined.
The magic is ruined. It's complex. I mean, you've seen this. You know what I'm talking about.
I have seen it. I've gone with you to the Value Village to buy trench coats. Speaking of accessories... I've noticed there's always an eye patch in Animal Fire shows. Will there be a character donning an eye patch next week at the premiere?
Yes, most definitely.
Do we get to know who it is, or will the audience have to be surprised? Because I don't know.
Well, I think they'll be surprised because the character is in one scene that is a page long. In terms of surprise, you'll be surprised that character exists. Shakespeare wrote him. It's a messenger, and he brings in a letter, and he's a pirate. So,
there you go, folks.
There you go.
I like to direct shows that are in the real world and they're very modern with pirates, with eye patches.
I gave myself that rider if I add in something fantastical because I will pirates.
Yeah, you proved it real.
That's such a weird part of Hamlet. The
pirates.
The pirates part. It serves the plot, but it always comes out of left field to me. If you don't know the story of Hamlet, he gets sent away on a ship in Act 4 and comes back in Act 5. And one of the reasons he comes back is because his ship was attacked by pirates. And he then ingratiated himself with these pirates, became their friends, and they gave him a ride back to Denmark. However, this is not seen on stage. This is just a story that he tells.
Yeah, I'll just clear up what happened when you thought I was gone for good. Pirates.
It's a little frustrating because I'd kind of rather see that play in some respects.
Yeah, you want to know what happened with the pirates. That's good.
Hamlet's a fantastic show, but it does not have pirate battles.
And what's weird is that in the part of the play that Hamlet is having battles with pirates, he's gone from stage and we're just talking for a whole act of Hamlet with no Hamlet.
Yeah, no Hamlet. He's off having a wonderful, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean style adventure. And
he's fighting the Kraken. While we're talking about domestic dramatic issues.
He gets to fight the Kraken while we get to go through a very sad Act 4 where lots of bad things happen to characters.
Yeah, characters, plural, or just Laertes' family? Because I feel like I'm at the center of a S-storm.
Yeah.
The S is for sand.
I'm glad you didn't swear because we have one explicit podcast. And it's your fault.
That's so funny, because the explicit podcast makes it sound like we did an episode of erotic fiction or something. And all it was I said the word that goes in front of storm one time. Very mellow. But it's explicit, folks. Don't watch Comedy Central after midnight. Can they say that on Comedy Central? I think they can.
They can after 9.
After 9. After 9, yeah.
I like how the S word is the word that goes before storm. That's how it's best known.
Yeah.
You know, that word that always comes before storm.
Well, I sidestepped it earlier.
Right. I just imagine the Weather Channel now being the filthiest channel on television.
It would be if I hosted.
That's fair. Fair enough.
So what else? You've got a shoe crisis that's coming up on you, but with a week to go, I think we can safely find some shoes. What do you see in terms of the acting? I mean, the production has got work to do, but in terms of the acting and the storytelling, what does the final push to opening night look like?
You know, this is a weird show because everyone who's in this show is a volunteer. And they have complicated schedules because they're all popular, handsome people. But this is the first show where we won't actually get a full cast run through until the week we open.
That's surreal and kind of scary.
It's surreal. So we've been doing lots of things in patches, and we've had full runs with one stand-in, you know, only one actor missing.
And it's usually me, right? Aren't I the
yeah, you've,
thorn
you've
in
been
your
bouncing
side?
In and out of here.
I'm commuting from Idaho to
It's
do this
lots
play.
Of people, but it's kind of been an interesting process because it gives us more time to dive into the scene work and figure out the nuance of the scenes in a more focused way. Sometimes maybe you run things too much and it becomes about the big final show. But we had a run last night, and I'm really happy with it. If we can find shoes, I think this one's gonna work.
Wasn't that the problem the Confederate Army always had? They were running out of shoes. In fact, I think they went to Gettysburg because there was a shoe factory there.
Yeah.
They're like, just send a scouting party out and go grab us some shoes over yonder at the factory. And then Gettysburg happened, which was not funny.
We can't fight the Union Army. There's a big road of gravel between us and them.
Oh, man. Well, good thing the North produced a bunch of shoes. We're the Confederate Army of play producers, apparently, because we are always lacking shoes.
I think shoes are just expensive, and they're specific, and they get beat up, and people's feet are weird sizes.
They're our kryptonite.
Yeah, shoes are our kryptonite.
Do us in.
Yeah. Much like the Confederate Army.
Yeah,
shoes
exactly.
Shoes are our kryptonite.
Okay, cool. So it looks like we're heading into an easy, stress-free opening night. You have nothing you're worried about besides shoes.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll be like a mess when we open. I'll find 100 more things to worry about between now and then. But you kind of have to be zen about it when you're in the park, because it's... The park is a beautiful medium for acting and storytelling. Mm-hmm. So technical elements are really just the icing on the cake, you know? If we had to do this in bike shorts, t-shirts, and using only sticks we found on the ground for props, it would probably be a pretty compelling show. We add in costumes because it helps tell the story more. It helps make it more specific. You know, it helps the actors kind of have a different mindset. You know, the costume can inform their character. But the goal with these shows in the park always is to put acting and physical storytelling first. So, with that said, I've got to go back and build some more stuff out of wood.
That's funny you'd say that. I just wanted to share an anecdote about when we were doing Macbeth, I guess that was 2 years ago. I had a guy in a bar. He was like talking to me randomly, and he asked, what do you do? And I said, I'm working on Macbeth in the park. And he happened to be a guy that liked theater, and he said, oh, good luck with that. That sounds like it's going to be more of a comedy than a tragedy. And I wanted to be like, F you, man, because it'll be great. Even if it is in a park, and even if there aren't any costumes or props, and even if it is a huge check I'm trying to cash, it'll be fantastic if we're committed to putting our hearts into it and trying to tell it honestly.
Wait, this guy wasn't sold on the concept of Shakespeare in the park?
Well, not for Macbeth. He thought that like that was too serious of a show to try to do in a park setting. You only do comedies in the park, he said.
That's really dumb.
I know, it was dumb, but I'm
gonna say right now, guy in the bar, you are dumb. it's so weird. People, it's so weird. The thoughts that people get in their heads are like the rules people make up. I do it too, but his rules are dumber than mine. But isn't that weird how people, expectations and rules people set up for things?
Yeah, I sometimes feel like theater, if you're attending or producing it, is nothing but expectations, and it's so difficult to enjoy things in the moment or to perform in the moment without being inundated with what you expected things to be. That's sort of a whole nother philosophical podcast. We go off on that.
That's like 20 podcasts and an album.
Yeah, and a lot of psychotherapy.
A lot of psychotherapy for like a lot of actors and directors and everybody.
Speaking of expectations, we have found out so much about Laertes just in the last week, which is funny because you would hope that I could have had these ideas earlier in the process. But as we keep going, I'm always blown away by how false my expectations are about characters and how much more there is to mine down beneath the first thoughts. Mm-hmm. I don't know why this magic trick always just blows my mind, but there's so much more to characters. Like, when we first talked about Laertes, I had this strong conception that he was going to be an action hero. He was going to be this guy that would storm in and people would chant that he should be the king, and he was this bigger-than-life badass guy. But the more we get into it, this play just feels increasingly like me, or like real people that we see every day that are really accessible and are dealing with domestic problems that, even though on paper they sound huge, they're things that we can understand and get into that skin.
Yeah, it's been my experience that the characters always get more interesting the closer they are to you. Because you've got more to mine there, right? Like, you know Ian. You know Ian so much better than you're ever going to know the imaginary action hero in your mind. And you're going to be more, it's going to be more interesting because you're going to have more to draw from and more to relate to and more to empathize with. And that character's just going to be richer because you've got a richer tapestry to pull from than, you know, what your expectations of what an action hero would be.
Yeah, that's what I always admire about Jay. Whatever Jay ever does, it's constantly grounded in that Jay-ness. He's never anything other than Jay. And I don't think that that you could ever have a chance of being an actor who puts on a bunch of weird stuff and can do that believably if you can't even just be yourself. And he's always so present as himself.
Yeah, I also think that that's something you can maybe get away with in movies more than theater.
Like the Johnny Depp school
of
acting.
Yeah, the Johnny Deppity school of acting where, you know, because you don't have to sustain that. You just have to say, you know, you have to say the five lines, the, you know, the 30-second scene, the minute-long scene to sustain that character. You don't need to go out for 2 hours and be that character constantly and drive you wild.
Like the Jean-Claude Van Damme movies would suck if he started giving a soliloquy about his feelings to the audience. It'd just be hard to take him seriously as a badass.
I don't know where you went. That seemed to jump the tracks on that train of thought, but sure, yeah.
Maybe that's just my imagination for that.
I was talking about, like, you know, hardcore character acting, and you brought in Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, I'm back on the badass thing, I guess.
Oh, okay, all right, back on the badass thing.
That it'd be hard to take him seriously if he had, like, you know, a lot of dialogue. Mostly it's just insert catchphrase here and then kick someone in the stomach.
Yeah, that's all expectations. It's hard. You know, I've had, you know, when I'm directing, I've had an actor come up to me and be like, I can't do this. Like 2/3 of the way through a production, a rehearsal run, just come say, this role is too great. I can't possibly do this. And it's this expectation thing where what can't you do? You know, what do you think you're going to fall short of? Right. If you're just playing the game and going for it, you know, there's not, as soon as you set that shelf, that imaginary shelf, it's going to be too high. It's going to be too weird. But if it's just you know, being present and playing the game,
yeah,
you know, you've got more to work with.
So what advice would you give to an actor that is caught in that situation, who's trying to be present but has all these expectations? Is there an easy silver bullet to cure those that mountain of anxiety? Because I've been there. I feel that way now a little bit still.
Yeah, I would do hill sprints. It's really hard to think too much about your expectations and be worrying if you're really out of breath and tired. I would just do hill sprints.
So just tire yourself out. Do something incredibly physical.
I mean, sometimes, yeah. I mean, that's the simpler way is to just say you got to throw it all away. You got to throw it all away and find a way to have fun and play and enjoy what you're doing. You know, and maybe you've got to just stomach your way through the show. And maybe this is the show where you realize I don't actually like acting. You know, it's not like. It's not for everybody. It's something you've got to enjoy, but everyone can kind of feel down about what they're doing.
Yeah.
You kind of, I think no matter what you do, there's going to be some weird struggle. You've got to kind of get your head right or find out some way to kind of knock out the jams and go for it.
The hill sprint thing sounds like you were making a joke, but if you looked at an Animal Fire rehearsal, there literally are like people doing jumping jacks, running up and down the hills, just doing anything to get out of breath so they can run into a scene and be... doing things for the first time.
It's good. It works. It really does. It just kind of helps you to not think as much and kind of helps you to, it helps you to focus into your body more. It just kind of helps you to live that scene a little bit more fully with your body and be present. But the goal is that it's just a training method so that someday you can just do that. Like that's the actor's job is to just do that, right? Like the running and stuff is stuff, you know, you do in rehearsals and practice and to kind of find those pathways. But hopefully, you know, eventually once you carve that pathway, you don't have to have such a big machete to find your way through the jungle anymore.
This reminds me of the sketch from Saturday Night Live in the 90s where Steve Martin and a bunch of other people are old dramatic actors and they're on a talk show.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, Laurence Olivier saw me running up and down the halls and said, my boy, why don't you try acting?
That stupid famous theater story. Yeah.
Oh, so I'm parroting a story of a parroted story.
Yeah.
Of a parroted story.
And we've come back to the Chinese telephone.
Here we go.
I hope that's not racist.
Chinese? I've never heard it be the Chinese telephone.
See, that's what they called it at my school, but I went to a pretty small school.
Here in Winlock, Washington. Google Maps it if you're not sure where that is.
So, I mean, the school mascot was the Indians. So in terms of political correctness, I may have had a bad education.
In their defense, though, they were the South Asian Indians. So it was actually appropriate for the culture.
Oh.
I wish you could see it down here. It's absolutely, stunningly beautiful. There's amber waves of wheat on the horizon. The birds are chirping. Their sun is out. It's a balmy 80-something degrees, but it feels good.
See, to me, this is madness, because you're just staring at my parents' backyard, and I'm just jaded and grew up here. I'm like, that's just a field. That's a field where horses go in that field, Ian. Stop writing poems about it, Keats.
Yeah, I guess maybe I have a more romantic view of Winlock.
But I think it's about time, Ian, that we got back to carpentry.
Oh, man, back to carpentry.
I know, so why don't you do the sad walk over to the guitar.
Oh, yeah.
To play me out while I remind everybody that Hamlet opens July 19th, next Thursday, in Priest Point Park, 7 o'clock. And you can always find us on animalfiretheater.com, facebook.com/animalfiretheater, or email us at aftheater@gmail.com. Play me out, Ian!